Welcome to the Carol Reitberger Show, where each week you'll hear a new topic dealing with health and wellness. Carol will be taking your calls and answering your personal questions. And now, here's Carol.
Well, hello, and thank you for joining me today. I'm your host, medical intuitive Carol Reitberger, and today I'm going to be discussing something that all of us has experienced in our life and may even be dealing with right now, and probably at some level we are. The word is fear. And right now, what each of us are doing individually and collectively is trying to move beyond that fear-based consciousness and moving into that enlightened consciousness. So today I'm going to be talking about fear and how this strong negative emotion not only can affect your health, but it literally can run your life. I'm also going to be taking your calls. So if you have a question for me about your health or you want to talk about today's topic, you can call me at 877-230-3062. That number is good in the U.S. and Canada and for international callers as well. All you have to do, of course, is dial your international calling card, calling code. The number to call me is 877-230-3062. 230-3062. There's a couple of things I'd like to start the show off by inviting you to do is that next week I'm going to be sending out my annual kickoff channeling for the year of 2011. I talked about it on a previous show, but I'm actually going to be emailing to anyone who is on my email list the actual channel itself, so you can read it, you can share it with friends, you can download it, you can print it, whatever you would like to do. If for any reason you're not on my email database list and you would like to receive the channeling, you can just go to my website, www.ritberger.com. And what you do is just go to the contact tab, click on it, and then when you fill out that information, it'll automatically put you in the database. So again, if you're interested in receiving this annual kickoff channeling, then what you'll want to do is sign up. And then also for all of my listeners who have been emailing me, thank you very much asking me, is there going to be one this year? Absolutely. So we're going to be getting it out very, very shortly. Also, I would like to invite you to join me for my free Your Health teleclass. It's going to be happening tomorrow evening, Thursday, January 20th at 5 o'clock p.m. Pacific Standard Time. That will be actually 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time p.m. The topic for January is high blood pressure. And high blood pressure is also referred to as hypertension, is actually the most common of all cardiovascular diseases in the industrialized world, and it's the leading cause of stroke and a major contributor to heart attack. Now, the thing that I found interesting when I was looking at this, putting this teleclass together, is industrialized country. And part of the reason for that I'm going to be talking in the teleclass tomorrow night has to do with the amount of stress that we have with all of the different comforts that we have and all the different processes and products that we have, that maintaining them can be just as stressful as not having them at all. So in the teleclass, I'm going to be sharing how conventional medicine, alternative medicine, and then myself as a medical intuitive medicine views this silent and potentially life-threatening disease. The real risk of hypertension or high blood pressure is the fact that there really aren't any definitive symptoms that we can say, oh, well, if I get this, then I need to check that. So it's often referred to as kind of that silent killer. So I'm going to be looking at that, also sharing some of the hidden psychological meanings behind blood pressure, also the impact that it has on the energy body, the role that personality plays in increasing the susceptibility to high blood pressure. Our neurology of our personality actually impacts our ability to deal and cope with stress, and then also certain things will trigger more stress in us than it may in other people. And then I'm going to be offering an entire laundry list of suggestions to help you deal with high blood pressure without having to resort to taking high blood pressure medication. Now, in some cases, it would be wonderful to think that the alternative choices that we have could be a one size fits all, and it would be able to deal with everyone's high blood pressure. But sometimes high blood pressure is actually tied to another malfunction of an organ or a gland in the body. In that particular case, then the alternative choices are very supportive of medication and can actually assist in the reduction of the amount of medication. But it is important to know that not all high blood pressure can be treated through alternative choices. But I'm going to be sharing a whole list of different alternative choices, simple lifestyle choices mainly, that you can do to be able to decrease high blood pressure, or to be sure that you don't get it in the long run. There's kind of a standard assumption in the medical arena that anyone over 60 is going to start experiencing high blood pressure, and everyone over 70 is going to be on high blood pressure medication. But again, that isn't really the case. So that's what my topic's going to be for January 20th at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. It is free. It's your health teleclass. So if you're experiencing high blood pressure, you have a family member or friend, then the best thing to do is just go on my website, www.ritberger.com, and then you'll go to the What's New section. You'll see the information on the teleclass. Click on it, register, and then I'll look forward to having you on the call. And one of the things that I also do after the teleclass is I usually add about 30 minutes to just dialogue and take calls, kind of like what I do on my show right here. So really, what is fear? Well, there's a lot of definitions, but the one that I find really sums it up the best is fear is false expectations actually realized. And it's the second most influential emotion that drives human behavior. Interestingly enough, the first emotion that drives human behavior and really impacts our motivation behind what we do is love. And I thought it was really kind of interesting that fear is the antithesis of love and that it is the second most influential emotion. It's also the most destructive emotion to our health and our well-being of the body. And the reason for that is because of the chemical changes that it causes to take place in the physical body. An emotional reaction is anything that within 30 seconds changes the chemical reaction that your body has to whatever emotion you're experiencing. Now, when we look at fear, we have to really realize that it's that root emotion behind all negative emotions. We have fear, then we have anger, and we have resentment, and we have hostility, and we have frustration, and then it again has a lot of negative emotions, can go into sadness and sorrow. So really at that root of fear is that we get those negative emotions. It really is what is responsible for creating the negative thinking that we find ourselves trapped in. Negative emotions, those distorted self-perceptions we have. The failure, actually the truth is failure is an event, it isn't a person. But what fear does is fear actually in our limitations sets us up for that event of failure. And then also number one contributor when it comes into the dynamics of the human body and why we're susceptible to actually experiencing illness. It's important to remember, and I say this over and over again when I'm doing my readings and my classes, it's important to remember we aren't born in fear. In fact, fear isn't even an emotion that we have anywhere in our repertoire of emotions that we're going to experience in our life. But what fear is, it's an actual conditioned response. And that conditioned response can, we know now scientifically, can occur when you're in the womb of your mother. And if your mother experiences specific fears and she has a strong chemical reaction to those fears, then there is a very good chance that you as a child, before you're even born, are going to be programmed in a way that if you experience that fear or your mother does, then your chemistry of your body is going to basically duplicate what your mother has done. Fear is what develops as a result of other people's insecurities, their demands, their expectations, their opinions, and their perceptions of what they believe that we're capable of doing and what we're not. Fear, especially in our informative years, those impressionable years where we're being emotionally molded into who we become as we become an adult, then we spend our whole life trying to get rid of them. Fear really is a means of controlling, and while the intention may be to do no harm, but on a parent's part to keep us safe, it's a control. And if there's enough emotional charge associated with that control, with the word fear, then there's a very good chance that you're going to experience a very fearful life. It's what stops us from doing the things that we know we should do, and in many cases, even what we want to do. Fear holds us back from being ourselves. It suppresses the expression of our uniqueness and our natural talents, and it causes us to suppress negative emotions. I always refer to fear as an insidious emotion because it's one of those emotions that actually feeds on itself. And before we know it, it undermines our ability to be able to think clearly. One fear morphs into many fears. And if we're not really mindful of the fear itself and the what we're feeling, and again, the body will instantaneously chemically react and change its dynamics in the way that it functions with the emotion of fear. And if we're not cognizant of the fact how those changes are taking place, then what will happen is, of course, not only does it affect our health, but it really actually runs so much of our life. And so what we do is that fear feeds on itself, and then we may not recognize that we have a strong fear around it until we get to a place later in life where we find ourselves not being able to move forward and immobilized. What we do when we fall victim to fear, we actually allow its limitations to come in and to alter our behavior. And there's something, I mean, we're conditioned very early on in life. Don't hurt people's feelings. And what that equates to as we develop mentally and our behavior is don't hurt people's feelings. Then what you do is then you become submissive. And if you become submissive, then there's not any chance that you're going to hurt other people's feelings. But what we don't realize is that below the surface of our skin, that fear is literally building on itself. And now we're afraid to do anything, make choices that may cause someone to get upset with us. We may avoid situations or avoid people or avoid relationships. So again, it just kind of builds off itself. Fear is what makes us defensive, and it's what puts us on guard. Now, in the reality of human emotions, fear really does serve a lot of value. Now, I know that if you live in fear, that is difficult for you to probably wrap your mind around. But in reality, what fear does is it's a strong negative emotion. And what it, in the chemistry changes of the body, it literally stops us in our track. And the gift of that and the benefit of it is that in that stopping us in our tracks, then what we do is we have a chance to go in, take a deep breath. Of course, in fear, we're usually not breathing. Take a deep breath, put yourself in the present moment. And when you do, you'll be able to look at the situation differently. It's almost as though you'll be able to step outside of it. And in doing so, then the body will naturally release the endorphins that changes the chemistry of the body. Now you're no longer being driven by fear, but you're being driven by a calmness and a quietness. So fear is really the inner barometer that we have that basically says, at this point in time, stop what you're doing. Evaluate whether you want to move forward on the course that you're moving forward on, or do you want to step back, evaluate the options, look at your choices. And then when you do that, then what you're really doing is you're releasing the hold that fear has over you. One of the things I hear so often is fear is a motivator. Actually, it is a motivator to disempower you. Fear is not a motivator. Fear changes the chemistry of the body so significantly that, frankly, your brain can't think at all, nor can your body function the way it's designed. So what you want to do is just use it as a check and balance system. When you experience it, look at what you're afraid of, who you're afraid of, what the experience is, are there any childhood things? And it doesn't take a tremendous amount of thought process because the fear is telling you you don't want to be where you are and you don't want to move forward in the same direction. So really, while it does make us defensive and puts us on guard, there is some real benefit to it. And in that benefit to it is we stop. Now, what happens when we don't? Then fear drives us into that self-doubt. It creates envy, jealousy, helplessness, hopelessness. Next thing you know, we're angry. We're angry at other people. We're angry at the world. We're angry at ourselves. If that's not taken care of, meaning finding a constructive way to be able to deal with our anger and express it, then we can start developing hate and rage and hostility and then resentment. And it's a very interesting thing because when fear has some benefits to it, fear literally causes us to turn on ourselves. And what I found as a medical intuitive, when I start looking at autoimmune disorders and where the immune system actually attacks different parts of the body, whether it's the nervous system or the muscles or the quality of the blood, whatever it may be, then what is occurring at that time is we have a fear that our body, our soul, is literally trying to get rid of. And if we don't, it continues to undermine the ability of the immune system. So Where does fear really originate? Well, it's deep within the brain, and it's the amygdala. It's the home of negative emotions. These are actually two small almond-shaped glands that are on either side of the skull. They're right just almost behind the eyes themselves. You know, we have the eyes that see everything literally for what is obvious. And then whatever our visual perception is, that visual perception creates an emotional reaction to it. If what we see, for example, is a snake and we have a fear of snakes, those amygdalas actually come in. And it's like they send off this major alarm. That major alarm changes the chemistry of the hypothalamus. Hypothalamus changes the chemistry of the pituitary gland. All of a sudden, the pituitary gland reads, we have a major problem, sends the message to the adrenals. Now your body is in full-blown fight or flight. So these two actually almond-sized glands are really what's holding the responsibility of seeing how we're going to survive. So if they read anything based on the visual observation that's going to potentially jeopardize our survival, they're going to react by creating fear. So what that fear does is it stops us from engaging in anything that's going to do us harm. However, again, what it does is because of the way the amygdalas don't have that monitoring system, all the amygdalas read is fear. They don't read love. There's other parts of the brain that reads love, but they read fear, and that's all they know. So as a result, whether it's a little fear, a lot of fear, or the mother of all fears, those amygdalas are going to send the reaction, we have a major problem. And the distorted message is this chemical chain reaction. And if that chemical chain reaction remains in a chronic state where it's a consistent, prolonged state, pretty soon the body doesn't know how to react or respond. And then ultimately the immune system loses its capacity to really respond to the messages of the brain that, you know, this isn't really a problem or it is truly a problem. And now what we have is we have chronic illness, and then ultimately we could have life-threatening illnesses. An important thing to remember is that fear and good health cannot coexist in the same body. And that's a very important thing to remember. So if you're in fear, distract your mind, do something different, take a deep breath, go for a walk. But at that point in time, don't continue to perpetuate it. So one of the things that I'm going to continue doing throughout the show is I'm going to continue talking about fear and how it affects the body, but I want to jump right in. And hi, Linda from New York, line one. How can I help you, honey?
Yes, hi. How are you?
I'm very good.
Good. I'm calling today. I'm glad you're doing a show on this. Is that I've been thinking about how I'm having difficulty moving forward in my career. And in my life, I don't take any risks. Mm-hmm. And I know that especially when it comes to public speaking or things of that nature, when I'm put on the platform for work, for instance, I freeze up and I'm unable to perform.
Yes, yes. And that is a straight chemical reaction, honey. That adrenaline starts, and then that upper lip won't move beyond the gums. It gets stuck up there. As Dale Carnegie says, the butterflies aren't in a row or anything. So that's a fear. So what you'd like to do is know how to move beyond that? Is that what it is?
Yes. I mean, I've done the you know, psychoanalysis. I've definitely, you know, have read a lot of books on the subject, and for some reason, and there are times where I am able to push through, and it's fabulous. But there are other times where I seem to just absolutely freeze up, and I don't know why I do that.
Well, the main reason that we experience fear in those situations is we don't have enough information. We either haven't, you know, done our homework enough, or what we have to remember is that we have to remember that if that is an area that we're comfortable with and that we have a lot of information, there is 100% chance that we know more than anybody in the audience. So in that particular case, anytime we experience fear, what we're doing is we're going on past behavior, we're going on predictable chronic chemistry changes in the body. So anytime taking risks, the best way to be able to do it is to gather the information. If you're going to do public speaking, write out your talk and write it out full. Write out every word that you think you're going to say. And then once you go through that process and you start the process, then you can do your little bullets, those little things that can help you. One of the things that I was a Dale Carnegie instructor for quite a while on how to win friends and influence people. And one of the very best things to do into being able to really prepare for any kind of presentation is to know that what you're going to be doing is talking about what you know best. When we were doing Dale Carnegie and we'd get people that were absolutely frozen in fear, which by the way was me when I first started, I couldn't, the thoughts of getting in front of anybody. And so what we did is we started out by basically have people standing up and just standing. And then what we did is then we said, well, tell us about yourself. And then if they froze up, we would ask them questions and pretty soon they would just start to flow. Then what we would do is we'd give them a little bit of an assignment, something they want to talk about from their childhood that was very, very joyful, that really created a lot of excitement. The purpose of that type of speaking process is that it gets you into this place of knowing that you know more than your audience. And that's the most important thing. Do your homework, practice it, break it down. Have your cheat notes. Don't expect your brain when you're up there in front of people being able to do what it needs to do just because of that adrenaline hit. I will tell you as a public speaker and everything I learned from Dale Carnegie, if you get up, sweetie, and you're not nervous to talk in front of someone, you're not prepared. Because when someone's not nervous, what that means is they haven't done their homework enough to be comfortable. That little kick of adrenaline that we get really is a lot of benefit. What happens is if it keeps pumping, but it is a great benefit. Toastmasters, wonderful way to be able to go. Again, starting to talk about yourself and doing that. So those are the things that you can do. I'm going to tell a quick story. I actually had gone through Dale Carnegie. An employer had put me through it, and it was important for me to do a lot of public speaking in this particular field. I was speaking to a group of realtors, and I had over 3,000 in attendance. Now, I had grown comfortable with 20, maybe 100. Excuse me, when I walked in the room and somebody said, oh my gosh, look at this, you've got over 3,000 people. I'll tell you, Linda, it was all I could do to go from that door to that podium. All I wanted to do was throw up. I just was a nervous wreck. I needed to go to the bathroom, all these sort of things. I was a wreck. I got into the process, had my cheat notes, started in, and I froze. And I thought, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? And I took a deep breath, and all of a sudden I said to someone, does anybody hear that knocking on the door? And everybody turned around to the back of the room, and I was able to get my top lip off of my gum because it was stuck like Fireman Bill. And I said to him, oh gosh, that wasn't anybody knocking. That was just my knees hitting the podium. From then on, I was okay. For me, the humor part. But sweetie, it's, it's what gives you your edge. It's what gives you good. But in that particular case, do your homework. Know what you're going to talk about. That is the best thing to be able to overcome fear. Truthfully, it is.
Okay. So, I mean, I've noticed that because of this fear in my life, I have like shunned away from high profile jobs, for example, where I would just not apply because I just don't have that kind of, you know, thing in me. Right. However, I know that, you know, what you fear most is what you're probably really can strive in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that your fear, not only because it's insidious, is really impacting so many other parts of your life. And if you could step back in a quiet, contemplative part of it and look at that fear of taking risk. And again, taking risk without the proper information is foolish, sweetie. But if you take risks based on having adequate information, based on the direction you want to go, take that step. Maybe more information will be needed. But if you do that, then what you can do is you can start to see how this impacts your life. And then instead of maybe tackling something that is so huge that seems like, oh my gosh, I need to, you know, go do this, tackle something in your life where it's really impacted you. Now, I need to tell you good news. you're on the air with thousands of listeners.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know what? I didn't hear your voice crack once.
Guess 'cause I didn't realize.
That's it, exactly. When somebody shares the wealth with you, like, oh, Carol, look at this. You've got over 3,000 people. It's like, oh, I'm only good at 100. I can't do 3,000. And I found myself when I was standing there only wanting to look at one little small segment of the room because that was my 100 people and not knowing there was any other. So, again, look at how it's impacting your life. Most important thing is don't take foolish risks, but then take risks to be able to go out and to be able to work with it. I truly, strongly recommend that if and what you choose to do is going to require you to be on your feet, then look into Dale Carnegie or look into Toastmasters. Mm-hmm. And because they're supportive, they're a wonderful group of people. They won't put you into a place where you're going to die on the spot. Truthfully, they won't. And what that can do is that can help you. But gather your information. That's the most important way to quell fear.
Thank you so much, Carol.
Oh, you are so welcome. Thanks for letting me share my story. You know, it was so funny. I look back now. It's like, oh, my gosh, you know, 3,000, that's a piece of cake. And then somebody says 10,000. 10,000? I don't know about that. So it's a little tiny baby step, sweetie. All right.
What I want to do, you
are most welcome. All right. The rest of you that are hanging on the lines, if you'll do so, I'm going to get back to you right after this commercial break. Let's take a quick one. I'm going to come back, talk a little bit about fear, and I want to answer your questions. So thank you for calling me. I'll be right back.
Would you like to learn the hidden meanings behind illness and see how a medical intuitive views illness? You can by joining medical intuitive Carol Reitberger each month on her teleclass series, Your Health. Each month she'll be featuring a different health issue and sharing the contributors behind it. You can register online at www.reitberger.com. That's www.reitberger.com.
ContactTalkRadio.com.
Have you ever wanted to talk with a medical intuitive to uncover the hidden meanings behind your aches, pains, and illnesses? Now you can. Internationally renowned medical intuitive Carol Reitberger is now offering personal and health-related readings. Discover your soul's purpose. Learn about the soul and the pre-birth agreements that you have with the people in your life. Readings can be booked online at www.reitberger.com. An hour with Carol can be life-changing.
If you have a question for Carol, call her now. Toll free at 1-877-230-3062.
Well, welcome back, and thanks for joining me today. If you are just joining me, I'm talking about fear and how to not let fear affect your health or really even run your life. Interesting topic, especially since as we start the 2011 year, we're really working very diligently and consciously and cognitively and spiritually and transformational and every other word we want to use to move beyond our fears so we can experience the natural gifts and talents we have and do our soul's work in a way that we're conscious of it, where we can find that joy instead of having fear in that urgency pushing us toward that work. I also would like to invite you to join me in Andover, Massachusetts, April 9th. I'm going to be presenting a full-day workshop with psychic medium John Holland and psychic Lauren Rainbow on the theme of 2011, which is finding your way. And the actual event is called Finding Your Way, Intuitive Messages from the Mind, Body, and Spirit. Lauren will be sharing insights into the workings of the mind. John Holland, good friend of mine, will be revealing how we're all linked to spirit and how we can use those messages that our spirit guides send us in order to be able to help us find our way. And then as a medical intuitive, I'm going to be sharing how your body and that inner guidance system can really help you interpret and understand the messages that your body's sending. So if you'd like more information or you'd like to register, you can go to my website, www.reitberger.com. Go to the What's New section on the home page and then click on the information on it. It'll take you right to the page to register. Also, to let you know that we're actually offering an early registration discount that's available until January 22nd. 2011. So if you would like to attend or so forth, you can go in, get a little bit of discount on it. We do have some premium seats up front and close and personal to all three of us. And those are also available. And I just know that the day is going to be really exciting and it's going to be a very enlightening day. I'm actually going to be having both Lauren and John on my show and doing interviews, and we're going to be talking about their gifts and abilities. So, you know, pay attention, go to my website, and look under my radio archives. I'll be having Lauren in February and John Holland in March. So very, very exciting event that we're going to be having all about the theme of 2011. And again, just a quick reminder, if you are just joining me, I am going to be sending out my annual kind of what I call kickoff channeling on the theme for 2011, which is finding your way. That's going to be going out very shortly. So if you are not in my email database, you can go to my website, www.ritberger.com. And then what you do is just click on contacts. That'll put you into the database, and then you'll receive the channeling when I send it out next week. Also, I'm taking your calls. So if you have a question for me and you want to talk about fear or you want to talk about your health, then you can call me at 877-230-3062. And that's good for United States, Canada, and then also for international callers. You know, it's very interesting when I was getting prepared for this show, when I looked at my own life and I looked at so many of the lives and the people that I do of readings and how we're moving beyond this fear-based consciousness, there's a perception that we have that our lives are really being run by fear and by different fears. But you know, really when it comes down to it, what I've learned over the course as a medical intuitive is yes, there's so many different fears. In fact, a whole laundry list that each of us has, but there's really only actually four fears that are at the root cause of so much of the behavior and the insecurities that we have. Yet these fears just build upon themselves, like I said, till we get a multitude of fears. They create various phobias and they keep us trapped either in situations, jobs, and relationships, even when they're harmful to our body. So what I want to do is I am going to take your calls, but I want to just go in and very briefly touch on these four primary fears. The first primary fear is a fear around survival. Now, that fear creates the fear of unknown. It creates the fear of insecurity. It creates the fear around not having stability. So many of the different fears. So that first primary fear is our fear around survival. And the reality of it is that we start to touch that fear when we go from that safe little place in the womb of our mother and we drop down through the birth canal, we come into this world, the lights hit us, we hear voices that we haven't, and so forth. Now that really doesn't create the fear that may drive us at 50 or 60 years old, but we go into the state of humanness at that point in time where our soul knows we're going to make it, but our physical body and our mind isn't sure that it is, and specifically the mind. Now, whenever we experience the fear around survival, we're going to actually have that show up in the lower back, in the sacrum part of the spine, in that pelvic area. When we get frozen with fear to move forward, then what we're going to do is we may experience leg and feet issues. Then when we get around the fear of unknown, we get those lower back issues. When we're caught up in this fear around survival, we literally are mentally immobilized, and we find ourselves afraid to do anything. Now, the good news of that is, because there is always good news, the good news of that is that what our emotions are telling us with fear is, don't move forward until you have the chance to really evaluate the situation to be sure that's truly what you desire to do. So again, being afraid of things is kind of like an alert, second alert, or kind of a signal that says, are you sure you want to do this? It's a check and balance. The second primary fear is the fear of abandonment. And whenever we experience this fear, we feel it in our lower gut, in the lower lumbar part of the spine. And then also the emotions of the fear of abandonment are sorrow, helplessness, hurtfulness, resentful, hopelessness, and so forth. And then also despair, guilt, disappointment, and it just goes on, and sadness, and it goes on and on. Again, as I mentioned in the first part of the show, many of the fears that we deal with, we're not born with. They're actually a part of our conditioning. When we go through, again, in that birthing process, and we move out of the safety and security of the womb of our mother, and we move outside, and then again in the birthing process where we're basically, you know, laid on her chest now, but it used to be swept and put on this table, we don't know whether she's going to be there for us, who's going to take care of us. So that fear of abandonment is something that we experience very early on in our life. And truthfully, when we experience it at that time, it's not that big of a deal as far as coloring the rest of our life. But then what we do is we have to go to kindergarten and our mother drops us off and we're not sure she's going to show up, or maybe a big sissy goes out and, you know, we're not sure she's going to come back. And then we fall in love with someone and then they fall in love with someone else. And now we have abandonment, and see, it just keeps building on itself over and over again. The third primary fear is the fear of betrayal. And whenever we experience this fear, we feel it in our stomach and in our mid back. We become angry, frustrated, and disappointed. But the reality is, the fear of betrayal, while it is the fear that others are going to betray us, what occurs over the course of our life around this particular fear is that we find ourselves betraying ourselves. And that truly, from the soul's perspective, is the greatest fear for our own physical health and well-being. So the fear of betrayal, don't turn on yourself. Again, when you have that fear, step back, evaluate where you are, say nice things to yourself, contemplate what your choices are, and then move into a course of action that will keep you in control rather than situations, experiences, and other people controlling you. The fourth primary fear is the fear of being rejected. And whenever we experience this fear, we feel it in our heart, our chest, and then in our shoulders. We feel discouraged. We feel that we feel discouraged, hopeless, helpless. We feel sadness, despair. We feel guilt, and then we start worrying. We're afraid to love or to leave ourselves vulnerable to others because we're afraid of the hurts that we're going to experience in the relationships. The reality of it is that we can allow those fears, that fear of rejection, literally cutting us off from the very thing that keeps us healthy, and that's love. First of all, the experience of being able to share love with someone else, but most importantly, we don't have the ability over the course of that kind of fear around rejection to be able to love ourselves. Why? Because we immediately reject ourselves. We do this all the time. We'll do something, somebody will react or respond in a negative fashion, and we immediately assume that it was our issue that created. We feel bad about ourselves. We reject ourselves. And then what we do is we start the dialogue, that rational dialogue that basically cuts us off from hearing our inner guides or touching our intuition or even being in touch with our body. So in those primary fears, fear around survival, fear around abandonment, fear around betrayal, fear around rejection. When you look at those four fears, then what you do is then you can start to see how all those other fears have literally built on top of each other to the point where something as simple as a pea under a mattress, in that, you know, metaphor, is something as simple as a pea under stacks and stacks and stacks of mattresses. When we get on that highest mattress, we can feel the discomfort of it. So again, in that metaphor is, when those fears come up, take a deep breath, look at the fear, identify what it is. There's only four of them. And then when you identify that, then you can start to recognize why your body is sending you the messages that it is. So how do you get rid of the fears you have? Well, many people will tell us that we have to conquer them, but that's fine. And once we recognize what they are, but the Hopi Indians believe that the gift of fear was to be able to keep us in a state with our inner guidance and connected with our soul. They also believed that with fear, to conquer fear was foolish, because in the conquering of fear, it's like poisoning our body. So what the Hopi Indians suggested is, learn to dance with your fears. Recognize them. Ask them to dance. Dance with them. Don't try to conquer them. Don't try to eliminate them. At that point in time, just basically dance with them. And then instantaneously, your body will change its chemical reaction, and now you're being able to literally shed the emotional, the chemical, the long-term impact, the limitations, just merely by acknowledging them, asking them to dance, going through the process, and then recognizing in little tiny baby steps that that fear no longer has a hold over you in that part of your life. And then you can dance with it again and again and again. And then suddenly one day something occurs and you recognize that you didn't have a fearful reaction. That chemistry didn't go sideways on you. The body wasn't screaming for help. The lungs weren't screaming to have you breathe and your brain was able to work. And all of a sudden you wake up, you become aware of it. And you think, I wonder how that happened. I didn't even have to work on it. Learning to overcome your fears should be effortless. If they become work, then what you're doing is you're going against them and you're at odds with yourself. Sometimes we need to change our thoughts. We need to change our beliefs. But the most powerful thing that we can do to change fear is to change our attitude around it. When we do that, then the fear itself no longer has this protection that our mind puts around it. And we remove its armor. And now we can knock down its walls by merely asking it to dance. And then suddenly, almost miraculously, it no longer overrides us. So lots of information on fear. Let me jump in. Hi, Pat from Connecticut. Hi, sweetie. How can I help you?
Hi. I originally was going to ask you about my arm if you had a minute, but wow. I have been, I started agoraphobia at, I don't know if that's the right way to say it, agoraphobia.
It is. Agoraphobia.
At age six. I've been terrified my whole life. I've had episodes of such severe anxiety. The last episode probably was 4 years total, but definitely 2 years constant. And I know that intuitively that I have an opportunity to be a brand new person, and I'm working hard and really succeeding at it. And it's interesting. Yesterday I was thinking, God does bring you what you want. And I thought, well, what would I wish for? And I thought, if I could have all my fear taken, that would be a wonderful thing. And the other thing was, last night I was crying and praying to my grandmother for forgiveness for not giving her the comfort that she needed with her horrific anxiety. And probably my mother had it too, but my father was a doctor, and I think he probably kept her medicated. So it ran in the family. My grandmother and I were punished with it by being put away in mental hospitals. So I've gone through everything, the rejection and abandonment and so on. I'm doing really well.
You are.
But I would, you know, and then it's interesting, just before, I've been thinking all day of calling you, and as I was cleaning, I was thinking, I really think I need to get help with 9/11. I was so affected by it, and I also went down to see it a few weeks later. I felt like I needed to take it into my body so I'd never forget. I think that was a mistake. Mm-hmm. I think I keep that fear in me and live it every day.
Well, you know, sweetie, I want to take a couple different directions with this as well. Yes, if there is a family predisposition to anxiety, that is something that genetically can, not always can, be passed from one generation to the other. And what that means is that the chemistry of the brain of the hypothalamus, your serotonin, the dopamine, which is part of the basal ganglia, the reaction chemically to adrenaline, elevated levels of cortisol as a response of the pituitary adrenal combination, that is very, very real. And when that is real and there's a true dynamics of chemistry, then sometimes the best thing we can do is to take the medication that can just not anesthetize us emotionally, but can help just almost reprogram the body to be able to remember how it's supposed to work. Even though we come genetically predisposed to something, doesn't mean that we have to get it. So that's one area. The other thing is, Pat, you are so intuitive, sweetie. and empathic, my gosh, you can feel things. I mean, truly, truly feel things. Not, you know, people will say, well, I feel that you're hurting. Sweetie, you feel they're hurting. I can feel it in your body. I can feel it in your gut. And I tell you right now, I can feel it behind your eyes. I can feel it in your head. When you see something that has so much hurt or so much pain or so much, the key word to your life, sweetie, is the sensitivity of being empathic, is the key word, suffering. When you see someone suffering, sweetie, you don't have the coping skills. And part of the reason for that is because your gift on this earth is to be able to empathically touch suffering, to be able to experience it, to be able to learn in baby steps what to do with it. And then you can teach me and you can teach everyone else.
Okay.
Your soul work, and you know, sometimes I say this to people in readings, you know, everybody, every one of us would like to have been a priestess or a priest in a past life, or, you know, the chosen one, whatever it is. And sometimes really we're farmers and paupers and street merchants. Some of us would like our work to, soul work to be about, you know, joy and all the other things, but there are a few, and there's not a lot, but there are a few that grace this earth that their whole soul purpose is to be able to observe suffering, to be able to find out what needs to change in that suffering. And when you do that and you make one little baby step, it's like dropping a pebble in the universal pool of consciousness. And pretty soon, by the time it hits where it needs to, it's a tsunami. Change happens. Now, does that mean you have to suffer, Pat? No, sweetie, you don't. What you are, it feels to me, you're here to be an observer of suffering, to be able to learn what you're humanly capable of doing to assist others in the suffering, but you're not here to throw yourself in the quicksand of suffering. In the process, your gift when you were in the womb of your mother is your mother suffered.
Yeah.
Your grandmother suffered.
Yes.
Your lineage suffered. So what I may share with you is that you're an observer of suffering. And if you can step outside of it, when you feel it, you will see it differently. Your intuitive skills will give you a different vision. And then you can see the value and the benefit that suffering gives to us is it tells us this is not where you want to be. So, from that standpoint, tremendous gifts beyond what you're working with. One of the things, my sister experienced agoraphobia. I'm very, very aware of it. She couldn't even go outside to go to the grocery store. Then she couldn't even go out. One of the things that we used is we used hypnotherapy in order to be able to help her with that. So she could literally have the vehicle to step outside of whatever that fear was. Interesting. Her fear was bright lights. Isn't that interesting? And when we went back in that process, the reason she had the fear of bright lights is that when she was born, the doctor had the light so close to where she, you know, my mother, that the first thing my sister saw was this bright light to the point she couldn't see. All she could do was hear. And my sister reached a point in her life that when she went into a grocery store at the bright lights, she thought she was going to go blind.
Wow.
So
interesting.
So just a suggestion, hypnotherapy can work well if it's something that has been brought over from past lives. Again, all my listeners and you included, sweetie, it's not to negate any religious beliefs around reincarnation. But if it's something truly, Pat, that you've done a lot, honey, and you can't seem to still find that one seed that is creating the fear that keeps you to the point that you can't go out, you might look at hypnotherapy. It's a wonderful tool for agoraphobia.
Do you do that?
I do, but you know, I don't, I can't do it over the air, because.
With a private session.
Yes, I can do that. But one of the things I will tell you, sweetie, is if you go on the website, hypnotherapy, and you put where you are, then you can go to transpersonal hypnotherapy, or better yet, why don't you call the Edgar Cayce Institute, ARE, in Virginia Beach, and ask them if there is a transpersonal hypnotherapist in your area. And the reason for that, I will be more than happy to work with you, sweetie. I would love to do that. But sometimes the safety of what we're working with, it's very important for us to be in the presence of someone. So now you have options and you can look at that. But from the standpoint of the chemistry, you came here to break the primordial lineage of your family. You are here to change the perception of female. Female is not helpless. They're not hopeless. They're not overtly emotional. They aren't out of control. All the different things, you know, that we've kind of conditioned us as women to be. You know, some of us don't want to put other people's needs before our own. Some of us don't want to do these different things. You came into this lifetime to change the pattern of perception around your mother, your grandmother, and to be strong and to be able to overcome.
This is really powerful. I just want to say quickly, it's very interesting that the one thing that I was taught that I struggle with is to look down upon this kind of, look down upon suffering as weakness. And I just think it, you know, it was brought in for me to have a lesson to overcome in my understanding about suffering, but that's been a tough one.
Well, you know, again, we would love to think that our soul's purpose is to, you know, experience love and joy and peace. But what better person to be able to share with others in a true vibration of heartfelt compassion around suffering than someone that's experienced it and has taken the baby steps to move out of it? That doesn't mean you have to be free of it. But again, that may very well be that you're an observer of suffering, and in this whole lifetime you've had with the people in your life that you've experienced that suffer, then you can embody it yourself to experience it. We all have free will.
Yeah.
But, sweetie, I do believe that you came here to be an observer, and you don't have to be in the mire and the muck in it until it's important for you to touch it, to rise above and move beyond it. I truly believe that about you.
Thank you so much. This is amazing information.
Oh, you are most welcome. And you know what? Thank you for opening your heart to me the way that you did. Brings tears to my eyes and a smile to my heart. I love you very much, and I wish you well. And, you know, someday when you write that book on how to move beyond suffering, I want you to email me, and I'm going to put you on the air with me.
Thank you. I love you. I'm always thrilled to connect with you, really.
My pleasure.
So I'll talk to you again. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. I know that I only have a couple of minutes, and Mr. Billy's going to keep letting me know how many it is, but Elaine, sweetie, from Minnesota, line 4, I just want a quick conversation with you, my love. So I have on my screen that you had surgery and you have a fear of further complications. Is that accurate?
Yes, Carol. Thank you for taking my call.
You are most welcome. I'm sorry it's going to have to be brief, but what I'm going to do is, sweetie, I want you to go in and spend some time with your body. I want you to find out if your fear is the fear around survival. My sense is it is. And then what you want is you want to create a new set of affirmations. You want to see your body healthy. You want to ask your mind to forget what you heard when you were in surgery. And then your body will do that. And then you will no longer experience complications.
Thank you.
It's strange to say, but you know, I've been in surgery rooms, and the one thing that we find, doctors will talk about golf, or, you know, they'll talk about what they're doing, or they'll talk about their kids, or they'll talk about different things. No harm was done, but you do have a memory somewhere within you when somebody said, oh, and I want you to go in and find that, and I want you to get rid of it.
Okay.
Your body is healing very nicely. I'm surprised. Your doctor is surprised, aren't they?
They're surprised that it's healing?
Yeah.
Perhaps. I haven't seen them yet.
They will be surprised at how quickly you're healing.
Okay.
The complications were not from your body. It was from the surgery. That was the O that I'm picking up.
Okay.
Did that help?
It does help. It does.
Okay. Okay. If you need to process more, if you're available tomorrow night, why don't you, if you can sign up, come on my teleclass. If you can't, come on later into it. Stay on the line, and I will listen for your name, and I'll spend a little more time with you tomorrow night on the teleclass.
Thank you. I know that you have limited time. I appreciate that.
Yeah, you are most welcome. I want to thank every single one of you for joining me today. It's always a pleasure to spend time with you. You know, I just marvel at this work. There are so many gifts that each of you bring to me. The gift today is that I always equate fear to deadlines, and I realized I had all the time that I needed to be able to talk to you. So light and love to all of you. If you want to hear this show, please go into my archives, radio archives on ritberger.com. Have a wonderful week, and I'm going to see you next Wednesday on the radio. Light and love.
You've been listening to the Carol Ritberger Show. Join Carol next week and every week at 10 a.m. Pacific Time on ContactTalkRadio.com. To contact Carol, visit her website at www.ritberger.com. That's www.ritberger.com. See you soon.